Welcome to the Non-Dual Performer podcast. My name is Sam Katadia, and we're going to be discussing performance in all walks of life. And we hope that this podcast will develop your curiosity and your insight around what it means to perform well.
Great. So we're back again. Sam Katadia podcast. So Sam, what are we talking about today?
Well, I thought we'd have a conversation around the notion of mental health. And my sort of whole professional career has been geared to learning ways to fix people's minds. I did a degree in psychology, then a master's in fitness and health. The sort of cherry on top was to become chartered with the British Psychological Society, which allowed me to sort of formally practice in the space of high performance and sport. And yeah, then went on a bit of a journey exploring tips, techniques. I trained with Paul McKenna, who's a NLP, neuro-linguistic programming expert, and it's all connected with the art of hypnosis. And it's really took me on quite a interesting journey as to whether a mind can be cured through actually doing stuff. And I hate to say it, it's a load of bollocks. There's been no evidence in my direct experience that one, a mind's ever been found, let alone it can be cured. And it, to be honest, it was required a lot of humility for me to admit that, because I'd invested my whole life, my whole career, my whole profession into nurturing that belief. And really, one of the reasons why I think I found it so hard to come to terms with that is because the more we invest in a belief system, the more we invest in an idea, the harder it is to let go of it. And Tversky and Kahneman, they won the Nobel Prize in human decision making, pointed out that as human beings, as mind bodies, we are very loss averse. We don't want to let go of our belief systems the more we invest in something. So those, we're certainly not saying that the experiences, sad experiences don't happen, anxious experiences don't happen. We're just saying that to say that a mind body can be ill because we're having a fleeting experience is where we need to investigate further. Because if we go into try and fixing something that's fleeting, we end up sort of chasing our tail. And very subtly adding to that belief system. So really today, would love just to bounce a few ideas around with you, Jamie, and sort of talk around this issue and notion of mental illness, wellness, and positive psychology in a little more depth, and go from there. So has that sort of sparked any questions in you?
Yeah. It really makes me think to when I first went on my journey, exploring the nature of mind within myself, and the main thing that most people fall into straight away, and I did for a time, which actually took me far away from, you know, truly understanding the nature of mind in an experiential way, which got results, and that is the topic of affirmations. And it's funny, when I think of affirmations nowadays, it's just like it's absolute lunacy. It is the opposite of mental health. It is like literally continuously lying to yourself in order to make yourself believe something, to substantiate a belief, and it's like spinning your gears.
Yeah, I think that let's really break this down simply. If we think that our well-being is an object or a state of mind or a feeling, then we're constantly going to be chasing that feeling. It's no different from behavioral Prozac.
That's a good one.
I it's not, can't take credit for that phrase. Of a guy called Michael Neal coined that expression in one of his books, and I think the whole positive psychology industry, affirmations are at the heart of a strategy or in that industry, is say stuff and you'll feel better. That's what an affirmation is. If we're boiling it down, if you say these things over and over again, you will feel better. And you know, let's put it out there to those of you who are listening. Has an affirmation ever permanently shifted your well-being? Has it left with you sort of a bit of permanent real estate in your own experience? Or are you clutching for more affirmations? If so, then, you know, I think that evidence is that affirmations are no more than a placebo or a short-lived drug. You know, can well-being be found in an affirmation?
Yeah, because often, like, people feel great for a really short amount of time, and that great feeling isn't even about the affirmation. It's the belief that they're going towards a destination, and very quickly, or maybe not quickly. I mean, some people, you know, are constantly pushing affirmations all the time, and it always boggles my mind a little bit, because, you know, what's the point of trying to think yourself into more thoughts? It's like,
and if we, what you just said there, which I think is a really good pointer inwards to the true nature of actually what's happening in our experience, what do we think is going to happen if we believe and we invest in an affirmation? We read all the testimonials on Amazon. It's the next best thing after Anthony Robbins' bestseller, and we think, oh, this is it now. What is going to happen to our sense of stability when that affirmation wears off? Are we going to feel more or less stable?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to feel less stable because we invested in a belief that this is going to sort us out. And really the series of podcasts is really a walking back to true nature, that actually let's start getting curious about the permanent elements of our experience rather than the temporary ones. That is where peace, love, freedom, that expansiveness can be realized, that it's available now. It's not available in a belief system that an affirmation can somehow take us somewhere, can help us somehow magic away certain thoughts, feelings and emotions. There's a lot of wonder and expansiveness to be found now. This is certainly not an exploration to prepare you for a future or to prepare to help you overcome a past, because they're just fictions of how we've started to make sense of what we're experiencing. And you know, hopefully we'll go into a bit more depth in that, but at the very beginning, let's call a spade a spade here. The self-help industry is propagated by a desire to sell well-being and a positive feeling, and that's no more than having a bottle of wine or seeking in certain experiences to feel better. They're always short-lived, and we will perpetuate that belief system till the day we die.
Yeah, trying to cling on to positive states is absolutely impossible. It's and it really brings me back to, you know, stuff that you've said about mental resilience and resilience and like what is resilience and how is that different from positive psychology?
Well, I'd say my definition, my understanding of resilience has evolved as I keep exploring my own sort of experiences, my direct experience. Resilience, I think is not minding what we're experiencing or using whatever appears in a way to trigger an exploration. I think it's too easy to say, oh, I'm suffering, I'm feeling really anxious, oh, I don't mind that, that's fine, I can just toughen up and get on with things. Suffering by nature is ultimately a call for us to investigate what is happening, because 100% of the time, if we're suffering, we are in a misinterpretation, a misunderstanding about what's happening. We somehow see our well-being in an object. So let me give you an example. If we're feeling anxious about going on holiday because we don't like flying, there's some belief system caught up in the idea that flying as a future event can somehow harm us. There is a sense of separation, there's a sense of sort of vulnerability there that's felt. And the good news for us all and everyone who's listening, including myself who's listening to this as I sort of explore it, is that it's just an alarm bell to say that we're not seeing things in our in truth. We're not holding the experience in truth. And going back to your question, Jamie, mental resilience, I think, is instead of feeling that anxiety, instead of running for cover in, let's have a couple of glasses of wine so I can get on the flight, is to hold in that anxiety and be pure, develop a pure curiosity for that arising of anxiety. And you'll start observing how that anxiety arises and dissolves. It will keep coming and going. And all you've got to do is just see it wash away back into the origin of where it arose. And then naturally our experience of now becomes far more expansive, far more open. And that for me, for want for a better word, that perhaps will relate to some of the listeners, will point to what I think mental resilience is. And a good analogy for being, you know, working in the sports industry, if you imagine holding in a very challenging stretch and you're feeling that pain, you kind of know that if you hold in that stretch for a while, your capacity to move will increase. And it's a bit like mental resilience, or developing our appreciation of truth and curiosity, because we are holding in that feeling we don't like, we're staying with it, we're being curious, we're not moving from it, we're not running away from it, we're not trying to figure it out, we're not reaching for that affirmation, we are holding in that challenging feeling that somehow has left a trace in our own mind body, and we're calling it out, we're saying, hang on a minute, maybe I'm misinterpreting things here. And that by nature will develop a sense of freedom, peace, love, which is accessible to us all right now, which is great. It's the thing that binds us all. It's not exclusive to some people over others. It is available to us all. And again, in this podcast channel, it's about nurturing curiosity for what is fundamental in our experience, not what changes.
So let's talk a little bit about suffering, because obviously what you just described there is incredible, and being incredibly honest with ourselves to the point where we, you know, realize that these strategies only ever, you know, delude us and create more suffering. You know, can you speak a little bit about how these coping mechanisms and what, you know, the deeper truth of suffering.
Yeah, sure. To go straight to our sort of wholesome answer on that is, if we believe that our experiences of our mind bodies, which we all experience, are somehow separate from the objects, the experiences that come and go, if we see ourselves separate from those experiences, we will suffer. And if you look at those people that perhaps have had traumatic experiences, and you know, we all carry a certain amount of trauma due to conditioning and upbringing, and 100% of the time any trauma that we've carried with us is perpetuated that the belief that we are somehow separate from the world. So what I mean by that is everything that we experience, including our mind bodies, is one seamless experience. There is no separation between the arising of experiences alongside a mind body experience. They do not arise from a mind body. Mind body and experiences around us arise in a sort of continuous seamless stream and arise from awareness and consciousness. So suffering 100% of the time is the belief that a mind body has the capacity to suffer. That ultimately is where we're heading to in these explorations, and we can use almost anything as a strategy, even my experiences of non-duality, which is by definition is the exploration of no separation or non-dual, meaning one, which comes from ancient principles from Vedanta spirituality to Sufism, Dzogchen Buddhism as well, all pathways into the exploration of non-duality. Suffering was born from the growth of the belief in a separate self. So when you look at the origins, where we have somewhat invested so much into a mind body and a separate self, we can look at the works of Freud, Sigmund Freud, who believed that the mind body somehow has even the capacity to carry trauma. Kind of does, but to say that suffering belongs to a mind body is what perpetuates suffering and really gave the growth the sort of psychology industry its first sort of stronghold position in Western society. Now Carl Jung, who explored with Freud, was very much more closer to truth. He was planning to meet Maharishi, a famous philosopher, spiritual explorer in India, to look at collective consciousness and look at the exploration of no separation in kind of fundamental wellness. And you've also got philosophers like, I believe, Plato, I Think Therefore I Am, that really developed the belief in the separate self. And really all suffering has come from the development and the nurturing of a society around this belief system that we are separate from our experience. We are gods in our own right, and in that has created an immense amount of suffering and damage to the natural world, to seeking in materials and seeking in materialism and capitalism, all in the pursuit of this idea that we can somehow find wellness and happiness in an object. So all suffering is born from this belief that we are all these sort of mini gods that somehow can wield these individual powers, and industries are sort of parasitically leeching off this.
Mm. That's a really great, observation. The whole idea of the individual being a god in their own right, that separation, which relates to identity, because, you know, individual sovereignty is great, but when it causes this belief of separation and object subject relationships, you know, for example, you know, like, there's so much media pumping into kids that you can be this separate individual. It's like straight from the get-go,
yeah,
you are a separate individual, and it increases and increases and turns over. So, you know, what is your take on in terms of in how the belief in identity is almost like used against someone's own exploration of truth?
Well, it's far easier to manipulate individual experiences if we're bought into the separate self notion. So if we think of kids who are born into this world, you know, you've got kind of Steiner school mentalities that allow organic exploration without imposing you should do this, you should do that, this is what you're good at, so you must do that. We are investing so much into individuals, young kids, to believe that they are separate. Now, I'm not saying, and you're right, sort of individual sovereignty, we have experiences, we have unique mind body experiences, we are a bit like a sort of vortex of activity in that have sort of arisen in consciousness, but we are all connected. We have sort of a sense of a perforation around our mind bodies that are ultimately connected with one another, which Carl Jung explored would I think it relates very much to his beliefs, his writings around the collective consciousness. Now, I think if our mind bodies could see how we are all interlinked and how we all share in the same being, the questions I put out there to everybody listening, and I'm mindful of this in my book, my upcoming book as well, are questions like, would we be more kind and loving if we saw ourselves connected with everyone and everybody? Will we feel more free if we're not vesting in belief systems around how we should perform, what we should learn, what we should do when we grow up? Are we going to feel more free and expansive if we realize that all experience is transitory and it comes and goes? Will we perform better naturally when we have an understanding there? So really, a lot of performance, a lot of my work now is not, I'm not putting more on people's plates. I'm helping them walk back to truth in a very organic, mutual exploration way. Any professional that says, I can fix you, I can fix your mind and help you find this and help you develop, will ultimately peddle misunderstanding, because there is ultimately no separate being there in which to develop. So you have to, it's so precise and so nuanced, but, you know, the more we can walk back to that space when we were kids, where everything felt free, everything felt transitory, everything felt so natural, the more value we naturally bring to our ultimately interconnected world and experiences.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful. And in today's landscape of culture, where there is so much polarization, there's intense polarization to extremes where people are essentially segregating themselves based on race, gender, belief, all these different things, and it seems to be getting more and more intense. Particularly as of this recording in 2020. So how would you address an individual who feels the pressure of this polarization in their in their exploration of truth as a unified.
Yeah. If we're feeling separate, lonely, isolated, we have to start with our own exploration. We have to be curious about that immediate experience. I would point people to Maharishi's very simple but profound process of self-inquiry. Now, self-inquiry is just an inward focusing on experience. So if I'm feeling anxious, which, you know, I do often, I try to become curious about the nature of that experience by asking questions like, to whom does that belong to? Where are these feelings arising? Can I locate them? What are they made of? Are they moving? Are they changing? Can I even find the source of it? Where do these feelings go? Are they moving? And when you become really kind of introspectively curious about the nature of the experience, you really go deep, sort of intimately into the nature of it. I mean, in some ways, Maharishi's process is more the Vedantic approach, which is almost the separation from your association with the feeling. So you realize, well, like, that feeling can't be me. It can't belong to me because I've sat here now for 2 minutes and in my direct experience, I can't find me. Now, the other direction or velocity you can take with that is you can adopt the tantric model, which is a more intimate journey into the experience. So really pull that experience closer to you and get into the direct experience of it. So like the example I said, an anxiety of flying. What even is flying? Have I ever experienced a flight? What is a flight in terms of a direct experience? Or is it just a belief system? What is flight actually made of? What are those images, thoughts, feelings, and sensations on that plane like? Are they separate or are they all one? Can I pinpoint down the sound of the plane taking off that I'm scared of? Can I separate that from the image of the plane taking off? And where am I in all of that? So when you go deeply, intimately into the experience, then you really start to bust through the concepts and beliefs that are layered over the actual fundamental direct experience. And you realize it's not made of anything. It's just traces of conditioning that have carried themselves in the mind body. However, we often need the process of self-inquiry to somehow reverse engineer these traces of trauma that we've misappropriated, we've carried with us from a place of misinterpretation. And that's all it is. And the exciting thing is we're all in the same boat in this exploration. Yeah, we all have different experiences and different stories, but one, we all share the same being, and two, we have the same capacity to realize that. Thanks everybody for tuning into my podcast channel for this episode. Hope to see and hear from you all soon. Thank you.